Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, our first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And tonight we are live, and we have an excellent guest. I am trying to open his biography so I can read it for you. My dear friend Jason Mankey, the bad boy of witchcraft. Jason Mankey read his first book on witchcraft in the seventh grade, and at age 24, dedicated his life to the craft. Today, Jason is a third-degree Garnerian high priest and helps run two witchcraft covens in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife, Ari. Jason is a popular speaker at pagan and witchcraft events across North America and Great Britain, and has been recognized by his peers as an authority on the Horned God, Wiccan history, and occult influences in rock and roll and heavy metal music. He writes online at Raise the Horns. His latest book, The Horned God of the Witches, was released in June, and is basically the reason why he's here tonight. Hello, Jason. How are you?
Hi, Laura. It's good to hear you.
How you been?
Things are good. You know, a lot of podcasts, a lot of work promoting the new Horned God of the Witches. I'm glad that you were able to sneak me into your show.
Of course.
I remember, like, when you said, you were like, I can talk to you at Christmas, I think. That's what you told me at one point. You are popular. What can I say?
You know, I don't know if it's about popularity as much as it is about my wanting to work in advance obsession. And I am booked
right now.
I am booked until December, and I am getting nervous about January. I have to start booking my January, February. You know, it's just a habit because I have too many plates in the air, and that is the only way to make him land safely is when you plan so many things in advance. But you know what? We worked some magic, and here you are, and I'm very happy that you're here. And are you still in Alaska?
No, I got back last night. So my wife went to a work trip in Alaska. We left on a Wednesday and came back on a Sunday. So it was very, very quick.
That is so awesome. How is it? Is it, like, nice and magical and beautiful? I've never been.
It was really pretty. I think going in August is the right time to go, because everything is still really green, and that's very different from California right now, which is very brown and very dead because it hasn't rained since February. So going there and seeing rain and smelling rain and seeing flowers everywhere and green grass and trees full of leaves was really, really nice. And we took a day trip and got to see some glaciers, which is important because, you know, the way things are going in 50 years, they're all going to be gone. So it was good to be able to see them before they disappeared. Yeah, it was really great, but she had to work. So, you know, after that one day trip, we were pretty much just in Anchorage. But it was really different. And, you know, you don't realize how high up you are in North America when you're in Alaska sometimes. I mean, it's north of all of my friends in Canada when you're in Anchorage. It's really high up, and the sun didn't set until after 10:30 in August. So
wow.
I was glad for the blackout curtains. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a night person or a day person?
I think I'm an afternoon and evening person. I'm certainly not a morning person, but my wife goes to bed at 10 And I'd like to stay up later, but she always says, I can't sleep without you, husband. So I crawl into bed earlier than I would like. Love.
Yeah.
It makes us do all kinds of things.
Right? And I was going to ask you something else, because I saw in your bio that you have spoken on different places in North America. So you've gone to Mexico as well?
Canada, not Mexico.
All right.
Hopefully
one day. Because, you know, I was like, oh, my God, he's been to Mexico and I don't know this. No, you've been to Canada. Where you been to, like Toronto?
I went to a festival north of Toronto called Wiccan Fest for several years. Before I lived in California, I lived in Michigan. So it was pretty easy to go to Canada back then because you could just drive across the border in about 90 minutes, usually longer because of the long hair. They were always assuming that I had lots of drugs with me, which was never the case, but they always thought that.
So speaking of, I know we are like all talking about so many things at once, and I know I connected with you, and I like to share this anecdote with people because I find it like hilarious. I connected with you first because I read your article on Led Zeppelin. Remember? That was like many, many years ago.
It's been a long time ago. It's like
10 years ago now. Wow. And I remember reading the article and being like, yeah, I know this all have like witchy implications and this and that. And then I found you and friended you and all of that. I didn't know you were like this super famous author and all of that. I was just like, hey, I love your article. It was pretty cool about rock and roll and witchcraft. And then now that you mentioned about the long hair and drugs, when I was young, and to this day, people don't believe me that I have never, ever, ever touched drugs. I mean, I have never even, like, smoked marijuana. And people don't believe me that because I like rock and roll. So how do you deal with that? Is that the bad boy of rock and roll is harder to shake than the bad boy of witchcraft? Or which stereotype is more hindering, if you will?
I think because of the long hair, there's always an assumption that I usually have some sort of substance in my pocket. You know, I can walk around my neighborhood in California, and I've had people walk up to me and ask me, you know, do you know where to find some acid and other things? You know, I'm like, wow, I didn't know that I looked like that. And I don't have a problem with anybody doing that, but I've always been just more of a whiskey drinker than anything else. So I've never really been into the other stuff. I will say that I don't really think of myself as a bad boy in the pagan world. I certainly like hanging out with people. I certainly love rock and roll, and I like a good party. And, yes, after 7 p.m., I very well might have a drink in my hand. But, I've never really thought of myself as too crazy. You know, I know a lot of guys who are – and I know a lot of – people in general, not just guys, who are much crazier than I am. I think I just have the look of somebody who would be some sort of like crazy pagan party boy, bad boy, rock and roller. I will say that because, you know, you're out there and you're presenting yourself, and I think how we dress can be a form of magic. It's like a glamour magic. Some people like mock the idea of glamour magic, but I think it's really important. So I know that when I'm at a festival, I'd really try to cultivate a look, kind of, you know, bohemian, hippie, rock star sort of look. And I think that contributes to people thinking that, oh, he's wearing ripped jeans, you know, he must just be a rock and roll party boy kind of guy.
Yeah. Of course, when I presented you and I say the bad boy, it was tongue-in-cheek because I know you've been... People like controversy and they like to call your name for that, but I know it's not you. I think I know you enough to know it's not you. But, you know, it was totally tongue-in-cheek. And go ahead.
Certainly wasn't offended by it, and it made me laugh, and it put a big smile on my face.
Yeah.
You saying that. Yeah, I'm gonna talk about that for the next month now, so I thought it was great.
Thank you. You'll help my ratings go up. And it will be nice, you know, if we make a story that Jason came to Laura's show and they were arguing really bad, and now they are like super offended with each other. They will never be friends anymore. And you have to listen to Lunatic Mondays to find out what happened.
Tune in next week to see if they are still friends and can still get along. Only on
only
Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, my God. See, that's why we get in trouble. Anyway, speaking of trouble, the trouble with writing so many books, like you are in number like 7 or 8, I think. And when do you live or how do you write? Because you are very, 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 is the word prolific the word I'm looking for?
The word?
Yeah.
The word right now is prolific. That's for sure. I am lucky that I'm getting to do this full time for the most part. There's not a lot of money in writing. I'm very, very lucky that I have a fantastic wife, Ari, who has a really good job, and she lets me stay home and write and do whatever else and take care of her, and many people don't get that opportunity. So that has helped me quite a bit, have time for writing. So that's a lot of it. I'm just advantageous. Also, I didn't really start writing until I was in my early 40s, so it kind of been building up. And I had all these things that I really needed to share. So, you know, there is something about writing a book that you really want to write and being excited about it. And when that happens, the book doesn't have to take 2 or 3 years. It can be done in a relatively short amount of time, maybe 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you have to sit down and you have to write every day. You have to do it every day, unless you're, like, in Alaska.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you about the process. I know some people don't like to talk about their process. Some people do. So other than writing every day, what else is the process for Jason?
I don't mind talking about the writing process at all because you don't really get to talk about it very much. I know it's very different from author to author. For me, the process usually depends on what I'm working on. So some books are harder to write than others. When you have a bunch of footnotes in your book, the book is harder to write. Writing with footnotes, which I think is important, just takes more time if you're doing a lot of historical things. Because you have to, you know, say, oh, this needs a citation, and then you have to cite it, and you have to look it up in the book, or you have to quote whatever it is that you're quoting, and get the page number right and the author right. So that takes a long time. But for me, I think when it comes to writing, there's a lot of research that goes into a lot of books. You know, like right now I'm working on a book about the Greek gods with Astrea Taylor. And there's histories of the major deities and then histories of kind of the smaller deities, but they're much shorter histories, and along with activities and other ideas. But to do the histories, you have to do the research. And the research is more than just reading one book that has 2 pages on the Greek goddess Aphrodite, for instance. What it really means is finding resources that have up-to-date scholarship about Aphrodite, reading those sources that have the up-to-date scholarship, looking at maybe some older texts just to get sort of an idea about how the goddess was perceived in other periods and other times, reading mythology about the goddess, and then reading books on Greek religion to see how people worshipped the goddess. Not to mention reading Hesiod and Homer. Those are sort of the big 2 writers in early Greece who sort of set the table for the myths of the Greeks and how we see those today. So there's a lot of background work that you have to do that I think often people don't realize or recognize. I know when it came time to write the Horned God book, there was so much background work. Luckily, I had been doing a lot of that work for 15 or 20 years at that point. So I didn't have to reread everything or read a bunch of new sources. I already had some, but I still had to go back and look them up and when I cited them and things. Usually for me, a day is maybe doing some research early and then sitting down to write after maybe 2 or 3, 4 hours of that research. Plus, in today's writer world, you have to do your Instagram posts and you have to do your Facebook posts and your Twitter posts, and it's so exhausting, but that's a part of the game too, I think.
And that is a lot because I remember the process of us getting together, getting to do this interview today, There is a lot of back and forth and attention to detail and extra work that goes into not just writing a book, you know, it's all the marketing. And then on this day and age, have you gone to TikTok yet, or are you not on TikTok?
There are certain boundaries I won't cross, or I have yet to cross. And I haven't made the TikTok. So I'm a Gen Xer, right? So I was born in the 70s. And you sort of know how to navigate the spaces where your generation has sort of a louder voice. And right now that's Facebook, but also to a lesser extent, maybe Twitter and Instagram. But TikTok is much younger in a lot of ways. And I just haven't really figured out how to crack that egg. Also, when I downloaded TikTok originally, that was back when everyone thought TikTok was basically just a front for the Chinese government to steal all of your personal information. So my wife made me delete it. So I haven't had TikTok on my phone in over a year. One of these days, maybe I'll get back to it.
It's a trap. I don't recommend it. And I totally say stay away from it. Because if you like if you like creativity, I must be full disclosure, I am not on Witch Talk. I am not watching witches or witchy content or anything. But if you like creativity and if you like people who are witty and smart and funny, then it's a trap. Because there's supposed to be a one-minute video, and then you keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Next thing you know, there's 5 hours gone of your life that will never come back. And, you know, what people put out there is really interesting and funny and artistic and creative. But it's literally it's hours of your life that are gone. So stay away from TikTok. I'm telling everybody to stay away from TikTok.
I will say that it feels more and more like Instagram is becoming TikTok. Because when I scroll through Instagram now, it's a ton of videos. It's video after video after video. And the joy of Instagram originally was just, oh, this is where my friend is, and this is a pretty picture, and that's great. Or, oh, look at the ritual that my friend did, or the spell that they're working on. I think that's delightful. And it was different than Twitter and Facebook in that you could kind of scroll through things quickly and get an idea of what people are up to without it taking, like, all of your day up and without the arguments that seem to plague Facebook. So I really liked Instagram. But now, though, when I, like, see video after video, and most of them are being published simultaneously on Instagram and TikTok. It's like you can't escape the TikToking of Instagram.
No, it really is. I think it's just taking more. And as you say, you know, it has to do with the generational consumers. And yeah, there are more Gen Xers on Gen Z on TikTok than anything else. But enough about that nonsense. Let's talk about the horned god of the witches. I, knowing you and knowing your passion, this has to be the crown jewel of books in the Jason Mankey history. Is this your red album?
You know, I don't know. It's either this or it's Transformative Witchcraft, which is a book that I really love, and I wish it had found a bigger audience when it came out. This was the most personal of all my books, though, the Horned God book. That's for sure. I mean, this is a deity I've worked with basically, not really since I started witchcraft, but within the first couple of years of being in the craft. It's the figure that I've spent the most time talking and writing about over the years. It's the figure that I'm probably most closely associated with. So in that way, you know, I wanted to make sure that I got it right. But also, these are the gods that I worship and honor. I mean, this is Pan and Hernonos and Dionysus. I mean, these are the deities that are in my ritual space and on my personal altars that I do rituals for and pour libations to. So it was really important to get it right. I mean, I wanted to present information to people so that they could know these gods, but I also wanted to honor of my gods and hopefully not show them any disrespect or shortchange them in any way. So it's really personal work in a lot of ways. So it's hard to sort of mix the personal with the historical. So when you talk about the Horned God, there's a couple of different ways you can talk about the Horned God. For some people, you know, the Horned God is this big figure, like who is Pan and Kernodos and other things, right? It's like made up of all these sort of different entities. And there's an evolution that you can trace on that figure, you know, that it came from here and here and here. And sometimes writing about it in that way feels like you're not a believer. So you're writing about it in this very clinical sort of, not necessarily academic, because I think my writing's too personal to be considered academic, and I hope nobody considers it academic. But, you know, but you're still doing it in this kind of clinical, historical way. And when I read sort of the early drafts, I was like, is my love of this figure getting through? Because I didn't want anyone thinking, oh, he's talking about it historically. He doesn't love the Horned God. And I hope that my love for the Horned God shines through in the entire book.
It certainly does. And I don't know how much of the book you want to give up on this interview, but kind of like to tease people a little bit. I love how at the very beginning of the book, you break it down for us because we don't know. We think it's one and the same. And you make this very loving and caring anthropological analytic differentiation of who is who. But why don't I let you talk about it? Because you're the expert and I'm just a podcaster.
I don't think you're just a podcaster. yeah. You know, for me, so the beginning of the book, it talks about sort of the different faces of the Horned God, so to speak, and how to define the Horned God. You know, and I'm pretty clear throughout the whole book that the term Horned God means a lot of different things to different people. And I don't suggest that I have all the answers or that my definition of the Horned God is the only God, is the only way. And I hope that comes through. But, you know, I thought it in the beginning it was worth talking about what most witches especially focus on when they say the Horned God. And a lot of times, of course, that's nature. I think that's the first thing that comes up in our minds. There's also fertility. I think sometimes people take that to extremes and we get overly obsessed with simply penises and vaginas. But I also think the Horned God is a God that wants you to enjoy life. So if sexual pleasure is important to you, I think it's important to him, and it's a way to sort of connect with the Horned God. The Horned God also has a long history of being a god of death, which is not something that's really alluded to in a lot of more modern, especially Wiccan type of books. I know like it's something that Scott Cunningham really glosses over, but it was there in the beginning when Gerald Gardner first wrote about the Horned God, and I think it's pretty important. There's also sort of the idea of sacrifice that we sometimes see with the Horned God when we plug the Horned God into Wheel of the Year myths, you know, sometimes, especially now. From now until Samhain, sometimes you have these myths where the Horned God is this sacrificial god who dies to fertilize the land so that the harvest can be taken in. You know, I think John Barleycorn is sort of the purest distillation of that, but there are other times it kind of shows up during ritual. And often it sort of shows up with the Horned God being this figure of dying and then coming back to life. So those are, you know, kind of important things when it comes to the Horned God. But also the Horned God, I think, can be either a title, like Pan is a Horned God, Kernonos is a Horned God, or Horned God can represent something bigger. And then in the book, too, I talk about sort of the nature of deity. And I don't have any of the answers when it comes to the nature of deity. All I know is that there are different ways that people have interpreted deity over the years. You know, there's hardcore polytheism, soft polytheism. Some people think that gods and goddesses are just energies and not particular beings, whatever, whatever. I also talk about that because I think how we perceive of what deity is has an influence to how we interact with things and ideas such as the Horned God. So if you're a soft polytheist, and I'm probably what you would call a soft polytheist, then you can like do your Beltane ritual and call down the Horned God. But then later you can do a ritual where you just call to Pan or you just call to Kernonos, and you can see all those beings as being sort of interwoven or somehow connected to one another in a way that we mortals might not understand. So knowing how one defines deity, I think, plays a role in how people interpret the one god.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to ask you, where you fit in the polytheist or soft, but you already answered my question, because this is the second time I was going to ask you something, and you gave me the answer before I asked you. Are you a witch?
Oh, yeah. I am a witch. I practice witchcraft. I mean, the book is called The Horned God of the Witches, not The Horned God of the Pagans or The Horned God of the Druids. It's called The Horned God of the MF and Witches because, you know, to me, as a witch, you know, goddess stuff was very important to me when I was starting. But if you look at the history of witchcraft and people who have been called witches for the last 1,000 years, in the center of a lot of those circles, there's been this horned deity. So this whole book is for witches. No matter what stripe of witch, if you're a Wiccan witch or a traditional witch, it's here. It's all in this book.
Awesome.
Yeah. I would say I'm a Wiccan witch, though. I mean, I do rituals in sort of that sort of Wiccan style, four quarters cast a circle, called deity,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah. I was, of course, being a smart beep. Anyway, we are so quickly reaching the first half of this show because when you're having fun, time flies, and obviously this being Lunatic Mondays, anything can happen. And I'm going to invite you, Jason, to hang in there while we listen to a musical break. This is coincidentally called The Horn God, and it comes from the voice of the one and only Kellyanna. So we're going to take a little break and we'll be back with more here on Lunatic Mondays. Don't go anywhere.
Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Round and round the maypole, weaving white and red we go, to celebrate the season and the Lord and his lady. The horned god guarantees strength and vitality, and sacred marriage to his queen, the horned god gives his blessing. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. The bellfire burning bright will blaze far into the night. In sacred grove and moonlight, the king stag is dancing. We drink a cup of revelry to growth and fertility. Spring has come, we've planted seeds, the horned god gives his blessing. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. At first ray of dawn he bids farewell to his queen. The Lord and his lady will meet again All Hallows Eve. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire.
You are listening to Lunatic Mondays, building bridges of community around the world. We'll continue with more. Don't go anywhere. Who is she and who told her she can be talking on my show? I'm talking about the one who told you. Anyway, welcome back to Lunatic Mondays, where anything can happen. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I want to tell you very quickly that if you go to CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, you can find over 500 hours of podcasts that are there for you to listen, to download, to share, to keep on your private archives, and to learn from a lot of them, the biggest bulk of them, by our senior minister and director of Circle Sanctuary, Selena Fox, the one and only. She has two shows a month. One is called Nature Spirituality, and one is called Nature Mystic, and they come on the air on Sundays and Wednesdays. Then you have twice a month Deborah Rose with Circle Talk on the first and the third Tuesday of the month. And then on Thursdays, Auditory, you'll have Moon Magic with David and Janet Ewing. And they talk, of course, about the moon, the magic, and they have once a month a full moon ritual. You also have Paganos del Mundo, Pagans of the World, or Pagados del Mundo, the second bilingual show for CSMP, which is produced by yours truly and conducted by Christian Ortiz, Carolina Amor, Monica Govin, Harwood Tuleva, and Petrucia Finkler, with different topics every month. Three of them are in Spanish. The other one is in English. And when there is a fourth month, we play something from the archives, and you never know what you're going to get. It's a mixed bag. And, of course, we have Lunatic Mondays. The first Monday of the month is always in Spanish. The second and fourth is in English. And such as today, we have Jason Mankey. And on the 23rd of August, we will have Laura Tempest-Sakharoff talking about her new book, Anatomy of a Witch. And on September, we will have Monica Budersky talking about Witch Fest North. And we will have Heather Green talking about her new book. And it's going to be amazing, so don't miss it. And also on September, we're going to launch a new special edition of Lunatic Mondays called Lunatic Mondays Social Justice Series. That will be in English on the third Monday of the month. And it is exactly what it sounds like. We're going to talk about social justice issues. If you know me for 5 minutes, you know I cannot separate my activism from my spirituality. And that is how I'm going to express it, by helping you get involved and being active on all these things that need to happen in the world. And that's about it. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome back my dear friend, Jason Mankey. Welcome back to Lunatic Mondays. How are you?
Thank you for the break. I refilled my whiskey and prepared to settle in for the second half of our conversation.
Yay! Well, cheers, my friend. I have a Diet Coke in hand, but next time I should bring some rum or something. Anyway, speaking of settling in and having fun, I know I was just looking at your Facebook page. We are both born in 19. Can I say the year?
Oh man, I try to keep it a secret.
I mean, it's on your Facebook page.
I was born in 1973. That's true. It's true.
Yes, baby. We are 73 babies, 73 edition, and we are aged to perfection. We are merely 6 months apart from each other. That is so cool. Anyway, back to topic. Let me focus here again, because you're drinking the whiskey. and I'm the one getting drunk. Let's talk about this wonderful book. And you had the wonderful vision to make this book very inclusive. You're staying away from the binary pronouns, and it is a very refreshing thing to see in an author, especially as the book is so heavily related with, like, the image of the horn god, so heavily related to masculinity, and to have the book written on very inclusive language. Where did that stroke of genius come from, Jason?
You know, there's no stroke of genius with it at all. It was just where things led me while I was writing the book. So, you know, most books go through sort of a gestation process. Like, you know, you have this sort of area where you kind of think of the book in your brain. And I knew when I was putting the book together that I was going to write about Ellen of the Ways. I don't think that you can write about the Horn God in 2020, 2019, which is when I was writing the book, and not write about Ellen. If you don't know, if somebody doesn't know who Ellen of the Ways is, Ellen is a reindeer goddess. She's sort of a goddess that I would say is sort of inferred in historical documents. If you read between the lines of things like the Mabinogion or the Mabinogi, depending on where you live, you might see traces of this goddess, and there are a couple of other things that allude to her being in the historical record. But even if she wasn't, if you go to Amazon and you Google Ellen of the Ways, you'll get statues made by statue-making companies that, you know, make all their stuff in China, et cetera, et cetera. You'll get T-shirts. And any time I did a Horn God workshop, I'd always be asked about Ellen. So I thought to myself it was very important to put this figure in the book. But also, while I was reviewing all of the sources that you would use to write a Horn God book, I found references to female versions of the god Pan, and I found references to female Kernonoses, or at least statues of something that was probably a deity that had antlers coming from its head that resembled Kernonos and were found in the same place as Kernonos. So I wanted to put all those in the book. To me, the idea that the Horn God is not exclusively male, it suggests that there are a bunch of different entryways into the mysteries of the Horn God, and that the Horn God is for everybody. Maybe it's better to say the Horned One is for everybody. And so that was really important to me. Always my deities have been, you know, gay, straight, trans, non-binary, everything, because I think that deities represent humanity as a whole. And all of those things that I just mentioned are facets of humanity, and they're natural things, and they're part of who we are.
Yeah, absolutely, and I have to agree. Absolutely, it speaks to my heart and my belief system, because me being a priestess of the goddess, I have tried to explain to everybody that when we speak about the goddess, we speak about all genders, it's all-inclusive, is not only about with people, whether they were born with one set of pipes or the other set of pipes or the other many sets of pipes, but it has nothing to do with gender, and it's just a figure that encompasses everything. So it's good and refreshing to see it, so to speak, from the other side of the road, you know, from a goddess perspective to the Horn God, and I really think it's wonderful. And plus, it's 2021. I mean, come on, people. It's not that hard to get with the program. Speaking of getting with the program, something that I really appreciate from your book was all the very many different levels of rituals that you offer and how to approach. Because, and this is kind of like a combined question, so you will answer in whichever way you feel more comfortable. There is still a little bit of a apprehension from some witches to talk about, like, images of the Horn God, such as Lucifer or, you know, that kind of devilish part of the Horn God that is also part of the whole concept. And some people might be afraid to actually do a ritual to know this entity or this deity. So why is it important to know the dark part of the Horn God. And thank you for all the rituals, I guess. Speak a little bit about the rituals as well.
So, you know, the part of the book that I thought would get the most sort of blowback that people would be angry about were the parts about the devil. You know, we grew up in an era, especially in the 90s, right, when you're a witch in the 90s, everybody's always like, the devil has no place, and we don't worship the devil. The devil is only for Christians, and it's not real. You know, while at the same time suggesting that every deity was real except for this one particular deity. It was always very strange, kind of how witches, especially Wiccan witches, dealt with questions of the devil in the 90s and into the early 2000s, and even now to some degree. If you search, and if you think about the history of the Horned God, and you look at the texts that have made the biggest impact on how we think of what witchcraft is, and on the Horned God, one of those texts is Margaret Murray, The Witch Cult in Western Europe, along with her follow-up, The God of the Witches. Those were published in 1921 and 1931, respectively. And Margaret Murray's idea in her books was that witchcraft was an organized religion that existed in opposition to Christianity. And at the centerpiece of this organized witchcraft religion, there was a belief in a Horned God that was worshipped, and that this Horned God was a pagan figure that went back thousands of years, but because of the influence of Christianity had been perverted and had become associated with the devil to the point where the people who still worshiped this deity thought that they were worshiping the Christian devil. And I realize how scary that can sound for some people and how uncomfortable that might make them. But if you look at Margaret Murray's The Horned God and how people worshiped it, according to her, you know, it was about a couple of things. There were initiation rituals. Some witches still do initiation rituals. She said that witches sacrificed babies, which is the one thing that's kind of hard to accept. And most of what Murray wrote probably isn't really true anyways, but there's no evidence of anyone ever sacrificing babies in the late Middle Ages, early modern period. But after that, everything's pretty cool. Like she said that witches feasted. Well, I like feasting. I mean, that's good. Food is pleasurable. Food is nice. Shouldn't waste food. Shouldn't overeat all the time. But, you know, our whole culture is built around holidays where we celebrate feasting. You know, think of a major holiday and there's always a big dinner at the center of it. I think that's pretty cool. You know, Murray said that her witches were always having orgies, which, you know, if you can get an invitation, I guess is pretty cool. But whether or not you can get an invitation to the orgy or not, the idea that sexual pleasure should be taboo or should be scorned or looked down upon is extremely unhealthy. And Murray was arguing that this Horned God of the Witches liked sex and thought that his followers should like sex. And then she said that this Horned God was about magic. And that's one of the things that witches do the most. We do magic. I think that's the one thing that really unites postmodern witches. And then she also said that witches did a lot of dancing. Oh, how sinful and terrible. So if you look at all of the things that Margaret Murray said witches do, most of them were pretty benign and were things that we do today and are things that most of us really enjoy doing. And one of the things I love about the idea of Lucifer the devil versus sort of Christianity is that, you know, Lucifer chose to be here on the earth with us. Like, he was cast out of heaven and then desired to sleep with women and have sex and teach them magic and how to make cosmetics, which is something they really said that they blamed for the devil, which was makeup, which I think is hilarious. Anyway, but, you know, God of the Earth, and that's very much like Pan and Cronos, who are shown in vignettes that show them on Earth instead of, like, looming above us in the sky or somewhere else. So to me, the Horned God's always been a god of this place, this planet that we live on. And in some ways, Lucifer kind of models that. But when we talk about Lucifer or witches and the devil, what we're not saying is that most witches really worship, like, the Christian devil, that we're worshiping a figure that wants to bring torment to the world and evil and pain and is the source of suffering and wants you to do things that are mean to others, not the figure that anyone is saying that witches honor. or worship in any way. And then there's also Lucifer, which is sort of a mistranslation from the Bible. Lucifer is a Greek word that just sort of means evening star or morning star, and it was put, it was kind of conjoined with the idea of the devil much later and sort of reinterpreted that way. But the idea of the star is the idea of knowledge and wisdom. There were Gnostic groups that looked upon Lucifer as the good guy in the story of the Garden of Eden. You know, God is like, Yahweh God is like, hey, why don't you just be stupid all the time? And Lucifer's like, eat this apple and be smart. Like, have wisdom and knowledge. And I think having wisdom and knowledge is a good thing.
Absolutely. I love how when a person is really knowledgeable of their craft and what they are supposed to be talking about, they can go on tangents that last 10 minutes and you don't even realize that that's what happened. And I love hearing you talking about all of these wonderful different aspects of a concept that if you believe in deity, then there are different gods. But if you believe in archetypes, then it's like the many facets of one archetype. And I know some witches don't like to think about it that way, but please don't come for my witchy card. I'm just giving an opinion here. And the other thing that I, like I was saying, is this rituals that you put on the book for people to get to know the Horn God. I am particularly enamored with the very first one. Tell us a little bit about where the inspiration came from to write the very first one, to get to know the Horned One.
The inspiration to get to know the Horned One, like where to start?
I'm sorry, I was muted. Yeah, how you put the ritual in the book, and again, I don't know how much of the book you wanted to divulge in the program today, but you know, give him a teaser.
Good. So for me, like working with the Horned One was kind of different versus the ritual that's in the book. I mean, I never really did the ritual until I wrote the book, but because for me, the Horned God was this figure that just sort of came knocking. Like it didn't have a choice. Like it was like, hello, Jason, you're going to honor me. And I'm like, no, I really don't want to do that. And this figure's like, yes, this is what's going to happen. So I kind of felt like pushed and nudged into it. But a lot of people don't have that experience. Or maybe they're like me when I was young. They kind of run from the experience for a year. So I wanted to create a ritual that would honor all the different facets of the Horned God today, you know, that are the most common, and sort of get people in touch with those bigger ideas of loving nature, taking pleasure in the world while being responsible, looking at ideas of sacrifice in a good way, because oftentimes we have to sacrifice things to get by. You know, and so I love my rituals. I'm really proud of the rituals I've written over the years in all the books. And I think the ritual to meet the Horned God is a really good one, and I think it really does open the door to get in touch with the Horned One, if that's what you're looking to be. I mean, there's, you know, it touches on all the aspects that I think are really important. You know, to me, like, the Horned God is the god of death, and that's not something a lot of people are comfortable. You know, he's got a hoof in this world and a hoof in the next world, and this ritual is a sort of a way to get in touch with that. So it's more than just, you know, the happy jumping around Horned God of the prairies and the woods. You know, it's just horny all the time. This is a god that has all of these very different aspects to them, and there are different ways to experience the Horned One. And I tried to put as much of that into that first ritual as I possibly could.
And I think you did, because it is a beautiful ritual. And if you want to know what I'm talking about, then you need to go and find the book and buy it and read it and practice it. And speaking of that very mundane activity, Jason, where can people find your book?
So I'm lucky that I'm published with Llewellyn, so the book is everywhere, or should be close to everywhere. If it's not where you're at, it can be ordered. I really suggest people go and buy books from their local witch store. If you have a witch shop in town, witch shops are great because they provide classes and ritual space and all kinds of other things and are a great place to get supplies. So if you have one and they sell books, you know, try to buy books there. If you don't, I mean, you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on Llewellyn. People will often ask me, where can I buy it to give you the most money? And while I do have an Etsy store that sells books, I've been out of this book for quite a while, which is really nice because people bought so many copies when it came out. So right now I get the same amount of money no matter where you buy it. So support your local witch store or support Llewellyn. And then, if you have to, use Amazon.
I like that a lot. Support your local stores, then support Llewellyn. And if you have to, then go to the evil one.
You know, I try to be really respectful, though. I mean, people buy things where they can afford things. And
yes,
if buying something from Amazon with free shipping and a small discount is the best way for you to buy something, I'm not going to shame somebody for doing that. And, you know, we all have to make choices, and that's fine, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is my exact same example when I talk about clothing, because I have to buy on one of those big box stores. And I've been shame about, you know, shopping at Walmart. And I'm like, yeah, the day you see other stores making clothing my size at affordable prices, let me know. And that's when I will move to a different brand. But enough about me. And we still concentrating on you. Right now, it's all about the Horn God of the Witches. But I know you have things that are already brewing. And I want you to give us a little bit of an advance of what is coming next.
So my next book is called The Witch's Book of Spellcraft, and it comes out in March. So, you know, again, it's pretty quick turnover, you know, book out in June and then another book out in early March of next year. And that's my magic book. I almost feel when you're like a witchcraft author, you have to write a book about magic. But I wanted to write a book about magic that was a little bit different than most of the books, kind of like building up your practice from the start and then taking it higher and higher, like adding more difficult things to do. I mean, it's not, when I say difficult, it's not a book of ceremonial magic. It's about working with candles and crystals and stones and herbs and knots and all kinds of things. But hopefully it describes how those things work and how, you know, different versions of those things work. And, of course, it has lists of oils and all that stuff, too. But I hope, and I think it's different, and I co-wrote that with two members of my coven and my wife, Ari. So that was kind of exciting. It was a little different. They all contributed a lot of ideas and are much better than I am at writing spells. And there's 100 different spells in that book. So I'm really excited about that book coming out. I was rereading it over the weekend, and I was surprised how much it didn't suck. So that was good. And then next year, probably November, December, I'm guessing, Astrea Taylor and I are writing a book together, and it's called The Witch's Guide to the Greek Gods, and it should be out then. And it's a book about the various deities in ancient Greece and how they were worshipped then and how modern witches see them and how modern witches work with those deities. So that's really exciting. That's due in like a week. So I have to like settle down and finish my last two chapters before the 15th of August. But yeah, that's almost done. So there's that. And then I'm going to write a biography of Raymond Buckland for Llewellyn, which is already contracted. So it's always busy.
Wow.
There's no escape. There's no escape from the writing. I want to get away from it. It's always there.
Yeah, please don't, because your books are really delightful to read. And I have to share with people, yes, Jason is coming in March to Lunatic Mondays. No, I am not insane. Yes, he's already booked for March. And before he goes goodnight tonight, after we hang up with you all, I'm going to try to get him for November so he can come and talk about the new book. And stay tuned, because we cannot get enough of Jason Mankey. And I am just so happy that, first of all, that you're my friend. You're a great person to have as a friend. And also, I'm very grateful that you write these wonderful things and that you say yes to come into the show. So all I have left to say is I leave you the microphone so you can say goodnight to your audience. And thank you for coming to Lunatic Mondays.
Laura, it's always fun talking to you. You're one of the sweetest, nicest people I know. I saw that you posted our picture together at PSG from, what, 2 years ago? You know,
yep.
Hopefully we get to do that kind of thing again soon. You know, it's been tough these last 15 months. And, you know, I felt like we were almost done with it. And now it feels like it's coming back, right? All of the COVID and things. So everybody's trying to keep positive, do what you're supposed to do. Stay away from people, get a vaccine, you know, wear a mask if you are in a place where you need to wear a mask. Hopefully we can all be together again soon, and we can hang out and do witchy and pagan things because that's fun.
It is indeed. And I will have to echo Jason on this, you know, try to stay safe and do what you need to do. You know what that is. And thank you, everybody who listened live. Thank you, everybody who will listen later. Remember that we are on Stitcher, Spotify, Blog Talk Radio, and all different places where you can get your podcasts. And Jason, once again, good night, and thank you for being here. Thank you to everybody who is listening. And until next time, never forget that you are loved. Good night.
Blue of the sun, blue of the sky, blue of the summer days gone by, blue of the harvest, corn and wheat, blue of the blazing heat. King of the people, friend of the she, father of heroes, son of the sea, giver of vitality, lord of the dance is he. Blue of the long arm, blue of skill, blue of courage, unbending will, blacksmith forging the battle spear, warrior revered. King of the people, friend of the she, father of heroes, son of the sea, giver of vitality, lord of the dance is he. Blue of a lightning, blue of the storm, swift and steady with thunderous roar, blue of blackened sky and rain, power of hurricane. King of the people, friend of the she, father of heroes, son of the sea, giver of vitality, lord of the dance is he. Handsome champion, eternal youth, fearless leader of strength and truth, host of games, of field events, and feasts filled with merriment. King of the people, friend of the she, father of heroes, son of the sea, giver of vitality, lord of the dance is he. Masterful bard, honey-tongued, musical lute, the shining one, plucking harp strains of sorcery, golden poetry. King of the people, friend of the she, father of heroes, son of the sea, giver of vitality, lord of the dance is he. Blue of the sun, blue of the sky, blue of the summer days gone by, blue of the harvest, corn and wheat, blue of the blazing heat. King of the people, friend of the she, father of heroes, son of the sea, giver of vitality, lord of the dance is he. Lord of the dance is he. Lord of the dance is he.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN Podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.